Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events in our central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in today. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy and Milford Township's neighbor and resident naturalist, Pat Schlerbaum. And because KHOI is the heart of our Iowa community, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, will join us later in the hour, sharing her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. Neil Diamond's America, and just made me think the last couple of days about my ancestry and how they secured an area in the Midwest back in 1832, I believe, is when my great-great-grandfather came onto these shores. Pat, you had a chance to talk with Carolyn Rathesberger recently, and what did you find out from her?
Carolyn is an attorney. And there was a legal case that was in the news last week. Recently, one of two environmental activists were convicted of sabotage and ecoterrorism against the Dakota Access Pipeline that runs from far northwest Iowa to the far southeast across Iowa. Ruby Montoya, then a 27-year-old former preschool teacher, and Jessica Resnicek, then a 35-year-old activist who grew up in Perry, Iowa. Resnicek was recently sentenced to 8 years in federal prison and ordered to serve 3 years of supervised release to follow her prison term and pay nearly $3.2 million in restitution. And in Montoya's words, some may view these actions as violent that they took against the Dakota Access Pipeline, but be not mistaken. We acted from our hearts and never threatened human life nor personal property, Montoya said. What we did do was fight a private corporation that has run rampant across our country, seizing land and polluting our nation's water supply. You may not agree with our tactics, but you can clearly see their necessity in light of the broken federal government and the corporations they represent. As a result of this admission, Montoya and Resnicek were indicted on 9 felony charges of intentionally damaging energy infrastructure, a designation that can render a private commercial company's enterprise a matter of federal concern. The designation was a provision of the Patriot Act, George W. Bush era national security law, passed in the wake of 9/11 in 2001. And federal prosecutors have embraced it as a way to target environmental activists who engage in property destruction. Here's Carolyn Raffensperger, director of the Science and Environmental Health Network, with her assessment of the sentencing.
I'd be happy to give some. This particular sentence of Jessica is really quite remarkable, and it follows on a remarkable history around the Dakota Access Pipeline. A lot of people may know of the resistance at Standing Rock, which was a major camp of water protectors who were protecting Missouri River and Lake Oahe, a reservoir that was just north of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's reservation and drinking water intake. And there were almost 1,000 arrests at Standing Rock. Mm-hmm. But what people don't know is that there were 490 arrests in Iowa, because we were also protecting the water here in Iowa. And our resistance went back to 2014. And Jessica and Ruby, two young women who were associated with the Catholic worker movement, participated in the resistance. And towards the end, doing anything that they could to stop the threat of this pipeline crossing the drinking water and the land of the people of Iowa and downstream, because it was going to cross the Mississippi River as well. It does cross the Mississippi River. So a spill just threatens so much. And they trespassed, I guess that's the language, and destroyed some equipment, set fire to some equipment, and did some other damage to the pipeline. So nobody knew who did it. They searched for them for a long time and then found Ruby and Jessica. So the sentence of 8 years is a little bit startling. And what was startling to me was that she was accused or sentenced for not only the destruction and the damage, but as an eco-terrorist. And this is particularly troubling to me because they have designated these pipelines as critical infrastructure, which means they get ramped up political and legal protection. And so anyone who does damage to them or tries to stand in the way of them is now going to be labeled an eco-terrorist. They have not designated our drinking water in the same way. So why they were privileging a private corporation and designating this horrible crude oil pipeline as critical infrastructure is beyond me. But the fact of the matter is they did. And they have now upped the ante with this particular penalty for Jessica. And it's really sad. It's really sad. But we've seen them go after the water protectors in pretty ugly ways. And what it appears to me now is that law enforcement is protecting private corporations and no longer protecting this, the residents of the community, the citizens of a place, who have a right and a responsibility to protect their land, their water, their homes, their futures.
You mentioned a couple critical forms of crowd control. Do you have specifics on those?
Well, we're seeing a lot of the crowd control up now with the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline that is going across northern Minnesota. And it's not so much crowd control, although there's that. There they used helicopters to come down pretty low and stir up the dust and gravel and dirt and just clouds of dirt to, you know, intimidate and harass the water protectors. They have just blocked off access to one of the indigenous camps for Enbridge Line 3. At Standing Rock, dogs were let loose on the water protectors, and they were, and that wasn't even official law enforcement. That was the private security of Dakota Access. And so this mix of private security, which is authorized to use force against water protectors, and then the use of the law to defend and protect pipelines over free speech rights, First Amendment rights, as well as our responsibility to protect water, seems to me to be an increasingly dangerous position for both the state government and the federal government to be taking.
And you do have an education in law?
I am. I'm licensed in Illinois. And, yeah, I went to law school. One of the things as a lawyer that I do, and I suspect that the listening public does too, and that's to think about the gap between justice and the law. And the injustices in this case began when they seized land of farmers in Iowa and gave it to Dakota Access for their pipeline. It began when they were given a permit by the state of Iowa. All of that governmental action on the side of a private company that threatens the well-being of Iowa seems to me to be a massive injustice. And this recent sentencing of Jessica that was magnified, the punishment was much worse because she was labeled an eco-terrorist. This is not just that when the government, which has the primary responsibility for our collective well-being, undermines it at every turn, we have a problem. And I'm saying this on the 4th of July. The 4th of July, which is supposed to be a time where we recognize a country that was founded on some basic principles. And right now, some of those principles look to me like they're being undermined. And it's a grievous thing for me as a lawyer. I stand first and foremost for justice, and I stand first and foremost for justice for both present generations and also future generations.
People go, well, she's a criminal. She got what she deserved. Why is this a compelling story to listeners who are just now kind of catching up to the fact that she was sentenced for criminal activity?
So there are a couple of ways of looking at that. One is she probably expected to serve some prison time. And one of the consequences of civil disobedience is that you are willing to take the to pay the price to stand up for justice. And many people among the water protectors disagreed with their tactics. And we also saw the greater evil being that pipeline, which is so threatening. So it's not a simple matter. Many people will support the fact that she turned herself in. They are willing to take the consequences for something they did, which was destructive against property. And at the same time, we can decide whether that punishment is fair and whether the basis for the protest was just. And I would argue that the pipeline is in and of itself an injustice and a threat to the common good, and that someone who chooses an action like this, knowingly and willingly accepting the consequences for that, in this case prison, seems to me to be part of that larger story about how we think about justice and also how we decide how we're going to live together in the future. Will we continue to permit pipelines like this that are so damaging? The threat of leaks is such a high risk. Are we going to continue doing that? And this is a live question in Iowa right now. So if you've read the Des Moines Register or any number of other papers, you know that there are pipelines that are being proposed and that will probably use the right-of-way of the Dakota Access Pipeline. And those are our carbon dioxide pipelines that will be piping liquefied CO2 under pressure, both to North Dakota and probably to Illinois. And what we know about those pipelines is that if they leak or if they rupture, they kill everything in its path. We were meant to exhale CO2, not inhale it. And they're going to be putting more pipelines in. And at what point do we say life and the beauty of our land, the health of our soils, the health and well-being of the climate itself is in our hands, is up to us, and we will say no to more damaging technologies? When will that be? So Jessica and Ruby's story right now stands as a major question about justice, about what we care about, and what we care about more than money. The resistance is big, and it's being led by indigenous people, especially in the Midwest. And we are, a mixed lot, many of us with very different ideas about what, the right tactics should be. But this resistance is broad. It is big. And this week, the day that I'm speaking with you, of July 4th, 2021, the ocean in the Gulf of Mexico was on fire from a leaking pipe line. Mm-hmm. And this past week, Portland, Oregon, and other towns in the greater northwest of the United States and Canada were at all-time world records for heat. And this is happening in a world where apparently we cannot say no to a pipeline, to a crude oil pipeline, which threatens to make everything worse. And so the resistance cannot be stopped. Mm-hmm. And I, for one, am grateful for all of the things that people have done, and also honor the fact that Jessica is going to be put in prison for something that was against the law. And you can ask whether there were other ways of stopping this pipeline, mm-hmm. and whether the tactics that she used were something that you would do. But I would leave our listeners with the question, what will you do and what do you do when your home is threatened?
You have been listening to Carolyn Raffensperger about the sentencing of Jessica Reznicek, environmental activist. We will be airing an interview of Jessica Reznicek by Mike Murphy on Friday, Local Talk. This is KHOI Community Radio. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Pat. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KHOI's Tuesday Local Talk. I am Mike Metz, your host, along with Pat Schlierbaum and engineer Mike Murphy. And later on, Anna Magnuson will be joining us with her heart-to-heart message. But at this time, we'd like to welcome Dr. John Passion, chair of the Story County Board of Health, who is just tuning in. And welcome, doctor.
Oh, thank you very much.
Glad that you were able to join in with us. And I was wondering, with COVID still in the headlines, wondering if you could perhaps update us on what's going on in Story County.
Well, the first thing I want to tell you is we're doing, in my opinion, pretty good on vaccinations, not as good as we could. We're up to about 60% of our adult population that is completely immunized, which I think is pretty good, not the 70% that it's felt that's needed for good herd immunity, but still pretty good. We have some data that says that about 50% of our total population is immunized, which I think is a very interesting bit of data, and that includes children who can't get immunized yet. The rates look like they've bumped up just a tiny bit. 1.3%, I think, was the last I looked at. Though I'll be quite honest, I haven't looked at it a lot over the weekend. And the thing that we're all getting very concerned about right now is the variants. There's a lot of reports about variants, especially the Delta variant, which tends to be very contagious, making younger people sick. The vaccine does appear to work against the variants, which is very, very interesting and very, very encouraging to me. I saw some data from England where the Delta variant just went through, and they reported that 88% of the people who were hospitalized or ill with COVID did not get vaccinated. So to me, that tells me that that's a pretty good protective mechanism to get vaccinated against the variants.
And in order to just stress the need for that vaccination protocol, it seems like what you're alluding to is the fact that even if you're vaccinated, you may get the virus, you may become infected, but it is, you don't end up in the emergency ward, you don't end up in the hospital on a ventilator. Is that my read on that?
Yeah, that's correct. It does, it's less likely to make you sick, but it also will be less likely to make you pass it along. I saw a very, very good quote from the Des Moines Register from an infectious disease specialist who said that if you've been vaccinated, you should feel pretty good right now. If you're not vaccinated, you should be very worried. And there's no way to sugarcoat this.
The other thing is, folks that are a little hesitant, I know there's a number of reasons that have been given, but they need to think about their loved ones, folks that are immunocompromised, or the elderly, or the youth that, if they happen to pass on that variant, may affect people other than themselves. They got to think about their community and their responsibilities.
You know, that's the whole concept about vaccinations in general, and I think I've talked about that last time. There's a concept called herd immunity, which is sometimes a hard issue to get around. But basically, if somebody gets a disease, say COVID, and they're surrounded by people who have immunity, either from natural immunity or from the vaccine, that the disease never leaves that circle. But if there's two or three or four people in that circle, there's a better chance that that disease will get out of that circle and get back into the community. So that's the concept of herd immunity. When you get vaccinated, you do not only protect yourself, but you protect your neighbor and you protect your friends.
Can you speculate a little bit or talk about the idea that if you are infected and you're not vaccinated, that you in fact become an incubator for those variants to potentially change and provide another viral variant that may be even more infective?
Well, this is a virus that seems to just, we have not been able to find a clear non-human host for this virus. So as long as it's still going from human to human, it will change. That's what viruses do. There are certain viruses that we'll never get rid of, or certain diseases we'll never get rid of for one reason or another. Mostly, the viruses or the diseases that only have human hosts are prone to be taken out. Polio, measles is one of them. Measles has no non-human host, so there is really a hope that we will someday be able to get rid of measles completely. And as it goes from human to human, it can mutate. And because viruses are living things, and they really try to and they are trying to survive, just like we are.
So if they run into a host that's been vaccinated, they pretty much are unable to pass themselves along in most cases, and so that ends it for that particular virus.
Yeah, that's kind of what the data says. I'm particularly concerned about areas that don't have resources right now. We're reading a lot about the Delta variant in Africa, how it's just tearing through Africa right now, and they don't have access to vaccines nor medical cares. And many of the places that, in many places, many countries in Africa have small villages where they don't have a lot of good medical care. It's going to kind of get them, and that's kind of what I'm getting very concerned about.
Not only not good medical care, but even if they did, they have such a lack of facilities to be able to take care of the vaccine and other items needed to treat the folks.
Yes, that's correct.
What is a strategy if you were to find somebody who is in denial or is reluctant to take a vaccine? Is there a strategy that can be taken to try to convince the individual that it's a good idea for them and their loved ones?
Yeah, that's a real good question. I'm a pediatrician, so all of what I'm dealing with is children, and many of the parents are hesitant because of giving a shot to their child. They talk about how it's been developed so rapidly. How can we be comfortable with how safe it is? They also are concerned about long-term side effects. There are some things that need to be understood. As this vaccine was developed, while it was put on the fast track, there was no pause in between each step. Once a step was finished and completed appropriately, they moved quickly to the next one. But no safety measures were skipped or jumped over, shall we say. As for long-term side effects, vaccines sometimes have immediate side effects, absolutely. There's no question at all. And there are vaccines are effective or not as effective. But there have been no long-term side effects seen from a vaccine. Can you think of any that's been kind of proven? No, I can't.
And the thing about side effects, since this is a virus that we haven't had a chance to really understand, we don't know what the long-term side effects are for those folks that did become infected and recover, and what is their long-term future like. We don't know what systems are really going to be at play here. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we also, this is kind of how science works. We keep learning and learning and learning more and more about it. The things that we were concerned about initially, we kind of were not as concerned as much anymore. And things that we thought were going to be okay are actually not. I mean, really, we're learning more and more about this virus as we go on. So hopefully, I'm worried about the fall myself, worried about when kids go back to school. We're going to have to see how it goes with that. But we're kind of just watching and waiting.
I would think that if I'm reading you right, you're a proponent for wearing a mask when you're still in an area with lots of folks, that since we don't know what the population, what the status of that individual, that stranger that you bump into in the grocery store or that area or a confined area, it's probably better to play it safe.
The CDC recommends that if you're completely vaccinated, that you do not have to be as concerned about that. I find myself wearing a mask in places where the workers are wearing masks, and just to kind of show them that I'm concerned about their health as much as they are. But in reality, everything we're hearing from this vaccine is that it's working remarkably well so far.
With the recent celebrations that have occurred and some of the other celebrations that will occur, thinking about Labor Day, for example, we've just had our 4th of July celebration. Would you expect to see maybe a little bit of a bump in the folks that are infected numbers?
Well, we're going to have to see. We didn't see any much of a bump after Labor Day, the 3 weeks after Labor Day, so we'll have to see.
Anything else that you'd like to add at this time, Dr. Passion? I know it's one of those, the more folks that get that vaccination, the better off we're going to be. What have you got to add?
Just get vaccinated. It's free. You can get it. You can walk into Target or Walmart to get it. Just get it.
For folks that are interested in our Science Bites, which will be broadcast later this afternoon, Sam Wormley and I are doing a review on the COVID and the situation. Parts of it are more from the scientific standpoint, and we talk about the way that it's passed, that it's turning out that aerosols are an important step in this, so folks might want to tune in. Thank you, Dr. Passion. Anything else before we leave?
No, not right now.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you back next month. If not, I know one of the other board members has joined us in the past. Molly has, and we sure appreciate your willingness to take time to keep us reminded of the fact that we need to be vaccinated. And if there are other things that come up prior to that, we sure would like to have you come back and visit with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. If you've just been tuning in, I'm Mike Metz, your host for Local Talk today, and welcoming now Susan Guiazda from the City of Ames. And hello, Susan. How are you?
Hi, Mike. Good to be here.
Yeah, nice long weekend. You look bright, and you're probably a little tired. You were involved, I'm sure, in a lot of the city activities this weekend.
Well, not as many as we used to be. As you know, we retired the community pancake breakfast, and that was sad. But it was a different kind of vibe at the parade, and it was, you know, it's a very warm morning, and it makes for a really long day if you're doing pancakes at 6 in the morning and you're still around there for the parade. So I would say that city employees were a little more relaxed. The parade went off very well. We had about 10 entries in the parade, including fire truck, police vehicles, our water truck, our Ames Electric Services bucket truck. It was really great. And we are sort of continuing that celebration and that pride in community this Thursday at our weekly Ames Municipal Bandshell Concert. But this Thursday, it is City Council Night at the Bandshell. And that makes it kind of a special event for us in that our city council members all attend. We give out treats. We'll be giving out ice cream treats this time. Simon Estes is our guest performer. We're also celebrating two significant city milestones, 125 years of public power, and we're celebrating the new LED lights at the Bandshell with a light show at the conclusion of the Bandshell concert right around 9 p.m.
You're just hitting all the senses, the light for the LED, the sound for Simon Estes, and the taste, the flavors for ice cream. What a combo. That sounds great.
Yeah, that's going to be Thursday beginning at 8. That's going to be a great, great evening. We hope to have a huge crowd. It's always such a fun evening. Simon Estes has just an amazing voice. The Ames Municipal Band has been sounding terrific. Mike Galimo is a wonderful conductor. It's really a wonderful, wonderful way to spend an evening. And it's been fairly pleasant. You get a nice breeze at Bandshell, so I would certainly come down and enjoy it.
And ice cream will cool everybody off, so definitely. But remember to bring your water bottles, folks. Susan,
we do have Ames Water that will be with us, too, so you can refill them.
There you go. And that I'm a proponent for something that can be continually reused, that's for sure. So, and what better than to fill it with the great quality of Ames water. I mean, we've got some of the best in the nation here.
That's right.
Susan, we've got a guest. We've got Liz Calhoun with us today. And anything to do as a lead-in, or shall we just start talking to Liz?
Oh, no, I was just going to add, it's so good to see Liz and so great for her to join with us today. Stormwater is something that the city is concerned with. It's actually a utility. You pay a stormwater fee on your bill each month. I don't know that people think about it a lot, but one of the things that Liz does is a lot of stormwater education, and she has an opportunity tonight that she wanted to talk about.
Well, that's great. Welcome, Liz. And I guess my first question for you is, where's the stormwater these days?
That's a good question. Yeah, it's like we're having another dry year. Not a lot of rain. The rivers are definitely low, and Ada Hayden Lake is also low. But yeah, well, hopefully, I think there's a chance of some tomorrow. We'll see if we get any.
Well, from the science and the research aspect, you use this as a data point, the missing water. It's like when we do other surveys, why are we surveying this one spot? Well, it's so you can compare it to others. So I guess you can look at it that way. That there's a silver lining there. Tell us about stormwater.
Yeah. Tonight we have a fun event. We're working with the Ames Public Library to put on one of our eco chats, and it's specifically going to talk about watersheds tonight. So we started these eco chats last year, and we started live. We had them at a few at the library. Then we went to the virtual eco chats, and we've been doing those ever since. And so this one, again, we'll have the eco chat about watersheds. There'll be five of us speaking, presentations and a video, and doing some education on some of our projects and what we can do for pollinators. We also have a presentation on our Story County Water Monitoring Plan, which we're collaborating with 10 different agencies and groups in town. So that's a fun thing that's just kicking off this year. We'll also be talking about the River Town of the Year. So Ames was awarded the Iowa River Town of the Year this year. So that's fun. We've been celebrating that all year long, and tonight we'll have a little presentation about that. And yeah, so it's going to be a fun evening at 7 o'clock on Zoom at the library.
If people are interested, do they have to sign up? How do they go about tuning in?
So if you go to the Ames Public Library, and you can even just Google Eco Chats, and that'll pop up. And then you just go to the library website, and you can find it there. And it's really easy. There's a link. You just click it, and it'll take you right there. You don't need to sign up ahead of time. You just come in at 7 o'clock, and it usually lasts about an hour. So it goes pretty quick, but there's a chance for questions at the end, and a lot of good educational points to be brought up.
Now, I have attended some of these in person when we held them in person and been able to tune in. Do you have a couple more that you're aware of that will be presented a little later on in the summer or fall?
Yeah, there's one more to go. We started these back in, I believe it was February or March, and we have one more in the series, and that will be the electric presentation. It's the first Tuesday of August. I'm not sure of the date, but it'll be the first Tuesday, and that will be the last one for this year.
Okay, and are folks allowed to ask questions during these?
Yeah, we save the questions for the end, so we typically have the presentations, and then at the end, there's usually 15 minutes or so to ask questions and make comments. And so it's a good time because it's very well-rounded, and definitely people have a chance to ask questions.
And if memory serves, I know that you're available for questions. If somebody thinks of something after the event has occurred, you're always open for receiving questions. Is that correct, Liz?
Yeah, exactly. We're getting questions almost daily about our rebate. We have five different rebates, and questions keep coming in. We keep getting applications, which is exciting, for different practices, tree planting and native landscaping. If you want to put some native prairie area in your yard, you can do that with and get reimbursed with our rebates. And one of our most popular rebate is the rain barrel, of course, which people are probably hoping they can fill here shortly, but yeah, that's a really popular and easy installation, and then you can water your plants with the rain barrel.
Talking about native prairie plantings or planting similar to that, the space between the sidewalk and the street curb, is that part of that? If you want to choose to perhaps put that in with some advice, professional advice, is that applicable to this rebate?
We typically discourage people from putting it in that location. We require that it be on